Feeling sluggish from all the extra food, drinks, and celebrations? Kick off the new year with a science-backed reset. Quiksilver Scientific's PushCatch Liver Detox is a patented, simple two-step system that supports your liver, gut, and whole body detoxification, helping clear out what's slowing you down so you feel energized for the year ahead. It's more than a cleanse. Quiksilver Scientific's PushCatch Liver Detox helps reset your system. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now the season 2 finale of Daredevil Born Again. I have, in fact, been born again this episode. I'm Alex.
Finally, I've been born again. What a long gestation we've had, and everything's coming out, Daredevil.
Yep, we are going to be talking about, as I mentioned, the season 2 finale of Daredevil, the 8th episode, The Southern Cross. It's the final episode of the season. Turn away if you don't want spoilers, but lots of big stuff goes down this episode as we are still in Karen Page's vigilante trial. The broad strokes here is that Matt puts Mayor Fisk on the stand, cross-examines him in a Few Good Men style, and ends up getting him by admitting to the entire world that he is Daredevil, which gets the case and everything dismissed. Mayor Fisk refuses to leave office. He holds himself up in the courtroom, the government building. And Daredevil and pals need to break in to take him down, leading to an enormous fight scene that ultimately has a quieter ending as Daredevil convinces Wilson to go into exile instead of staying in the city. Daredevil goes to jail. We also get the reveal of Luke Cage and Alias Investigations at the end. And finally, the moment everybody has been waiting for, Heather becomes Lady Muse is the official name. That's not the official name of the character. She Muse, something like that. I don't know. Probably the just Muse, let's be honest. But I skipped over a ton of stuff there that goes down in this episode because I do want to get into talking about it. Pete obviously isn't here. I was about to say he's been more positive about the season, but I think he's been pretty mixed, mostly because Punisher isn't here. He'll be probably happy next week when we get the Punisher one-shot special, which, of course, we'll be covering as well. But why don't we talk about this? You and I have definitely been negative about this season, though there have been positives throughout. I'll just come out and say I thought this finale, for the most part, was phenomenal. Like, absolutely thrilling, edge-of-the-seat stuff, huge changes. Gave me that feeling of the old MCU where I was like, what? What's happening? Ah, this is crazy. Almost throughout the episode, I have some quibbles. I have some qualms. Overall, I don't think a great finale fixes a mixed to sometimes pretty bad season of television. And in fact, if we're going to talk about the overall arc here, the thing that was frustrating for me that came out of this episode is it felt like this was a classic holding everything back for the finale. Like, they had the end point for everything, and they're like, okay, we have 7 hours to fill before that. How do we get there from here? When, just get there, you know, just do the thing, put it, like we've been saying all season long, put it all on the table, because this was great. I would have loved to see this. I don't know if they could have hit this in every episode, but I would have loved to see this feeling more frequently, because I got that feeling more frequently for the first season and didn't get it in the second season.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I really enjoyed this. It was able to do what I think the best MCU stuff has done from the beginning is elevate beyond a too complicated story via the performances to deliver something where I'm like so forgiving of like the trial being like, I don't know if the legality of this is at all decipherable, but man, was I caught up in the Matt Thick Wilson exchanges in that courtroom were so good. And the whole sequence, because like we came in and I was like, Karen on trial for being a vigilante. It's just so odd. And in the beginning of that, it was just like, I don't know how this doesn't make any sense. And they're making the case that she never wore a mask. She's like just trying to do some stuff that we have the freedom to do in this country for the most part. And then when they flipped the switch, I was like, oh, yes, it all makes sense. Mm-hmm. The judge dismissing the case, I was like, wait, what? Ah, who cares? It was awesome. It was perfect.
Yeah, this is such a dumb thing to say out loud, but really all you want from entertainment is to feel something. And yes. This took me on a roller coaster of emotions. I felt every moment, particularly, I want to give a shout out to Deborah Adwall in this episode, because the amount of emotion and feeling she puts into when they dismiss the case in particular, that she hugs and kisses Matt, like, you feel that on screen. It's great.
The cutaways to her during the conversation where you see, they just did such a great job. A show, like a season I feel like I definitely have been criticizing the writing a fair amount, but man, did they just temper this speech so well. And gave Charlie Cox the chance to just get him in a way that I'm like, yes, finally. And the cutaways to Deborah Ann Wall and the other characters there was so good. It really gave the weight underneath it. Because, like, Matt getting ready to expose himself, I was like, whoa, crazy. And then you see her be like, oh, no. And I'm like, oh, yes, this is actually horrible. This is going to be very bad for everyone. It just was like a very well-conducted sequence, that whole thing was.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I'm so glad they went for it, too. Like, this is something that is in the comics by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. It's in a different form, but it's Matt on trial saying, actually, I am Daredevil. He's being cross-examined by Kristen McDuffie. So the elements are there. I think he's forced into the situation in a certain way by Kingpin, threatening to reveal his identity, if I remember correctly, and it leads to a big status quo change, which we do not get here. It's a different status quo change at the end that is from a different storyline in the comics called The Devil in Cell Block D by Ed Brubaker. Yeah. So again, that's not a one-to-one, not to get too wonky about it, but like, I feel like they picked up those elements really nicely and worked it in from the comics and then figured out how to remix it, which again, is what the strength of the MCU has been, and be like, what works? What works for the comics? Okay, now ditch it and keep those elements and figure out how it works on screen. And that's what they really do here. I will say, like, on a little bit, it's not even negative. I just wanted more of this. Kristen, like, literally anything Kristen. Like, this is a character they don't know what to do with on the show at all. They threw her in season one. Yeah, Kristen McDuffie. And I thought her reaction also side by side with Karen Page was really interesting, because she doesn't know that Matt is Daredevil. Yeah. So she's very like, what is going on? And there's this quick shot that they cut, like they pan away from as Matt and Karen are reuniting after the trial, where she walks off in the other direction. And I want to know more about that. Like, what is her reaction to being lied to by Matt and Daredevil for all these years? That's interesting.
Really cool, I agree. And then, but the 1-2 punch of Kristen and Karen being, Karen's the heart and she's the head, being like, what are you doing this? This is ruining the case. I thought was really cool. I mean, going back to what you were saying about sort of the way this was constructed, with they have this great episode at the end of the season and then building up to it, I was like, you could have just done so much less to get here. And then we could have really had more of that emotionality coming early. Like, I understand you wanted the Christoffy testimony here, but like, you didn't really need it. It's just the feint before you get to the Matt stuff. So that we could have dispensed with just so much of that ship back and forth in the first like 4 or 5 episodes that was such a MacGuffin that we just didn't need when everything was here. If this season was just the dance of between Matt and Wilson, getting to this moment where Matt traps him by sort of sacrificing his good life.
Right. You were saying earlier also about the legality, like, this is we're not lawyers. So this is the thing about watching law shows. It ultimately doesn't matter as long as it feels cool. And any lawyers who are listening to this podcast right now are probably absolutely screaming, because that's not how it works for them. And I get that, but I don't need Matt to be like, well, I've carefully built a case to trap Wilson here. I just need him to trap Wilson. That's all I need. So I understand being like, well, we have this video evidence. That's part of it. But then we need an eyewitness who is Daredevil, and that adds into it. So They do a good job of building up the legal case throughout the episode, but that's not anything that they've done in the previous seven episodes of the season, down to we were criticizing them in a previous episode for Pete and I were talking about it. The thing where they're introducing the vigilante trial last episode, and the only details they give of the trial are Kristen being like, not guilty, and Hochberg being like, guilty. And I'm like, well, that's the one part of the trial we all know. You don't need to lay that out. So if you're going to ignore it in some places and then be meticulous about it in some places, I think the better place to hit is the halfway point, where it's like, is this legally what we need to do? I don't know. But is it dramatically thrilling? Yes.
Yeah, definitely agree there. And the three judges, the sign behind them, which reads "Truth is great and shall prevail," feels like, I know this isn't the case, but it feels very like chat written. Like, "Truth is great and shall prevail." I'm like, is that what it's supposed to say there? It sounds like what a kid says happens in court.
Yeah. One other thing that I want to call out about the trial, I'm sure there's more moments that I'm forgetting, but another moment that I thought was really missing from this season that I thought was great in the finale is when they go into the judges' chambers to talk to them and Kingpin is whispering so Daredevil could hear him. That's great. But the better part was Daredevil answering him out loud and then being like, oh, yeah, which was funny. Like, we've been missing humor this season, and that was a great use of Daredevil's powers, a great play off visually of the relationship between Kingpin and Matt that had a really nice button to it.
Well, and just to get that, I agree that moment was great. And Charlie Cox's performance a little bit. There's a lot of ways he could play this. This could be Daredevil under the weight of all of these bad choices, being like very like feeling the depression that will come. He's been so like depressed basically all season. But I love how it was played here where Daredevil, Matt, is excited to do this because he's willing to sacrifice anything in his life if he can just get this final like nail in the coffin of Wilson Fisk being in New York. And through that whole thing, you don't see him regretting at all that he's giving up his identity and going to jail. He is thrilled that he gets to deliver this speech in the courtroom. And I thought that was the smartest choice of the season. It was thrilling to see him do that and see Wilson think he's got him and then lose so hard.
We've been kind of bouncing around this, and we've mentioned this with previous episodes, but I'll throw out a theory why this episode worked when the other episodes didn't. This episode of Daredevil Born Again worked because it focused on the character of Daredevil, I believe, which the previous seven ones, like, he's been to the side. He's been to the background. Like, we've talked about this incessantly, but he's been in the fight scenes. He's definitely had dialogue, but he's been so even the entire time. We're here. You're absolutely right. He's jumping into the fray. He is the man without fear, except on the side of trials. He's active. He's doing things. And the fact that they like held him in reserve for seven episodes was frustrating to watch.
Yeah. And unnecessary, because his tonal change here is enough. He could have been doing truly anything the rest of the season, and it wouldn't have harmed what we see here, because it's such a different version of it.
Not to try to plus up the script or anything, but more done-in-one villains, like more episodic structure here, more villains of the week type thing, where he's dealing with one thing while this other plot is bubbling in the background. That would help sift away some of the plot lines that aren't working, all the characters that they don't know what to do with, and instead focus it on the thing that does work, which is Daredevil at the center of this Daredevil show.
Yeah, I mean, I get the idea of not doing Heather as Muse, just coming off a season where Muse was the villain, but they already established it so hard at the early part of the season that it feels like the fact that this Heather becoming Muse is a two-season arc now, I'm like, not necessary.
No.
So I wish he was fighting her, because while it does seem repetitive maybe, the idea that he and Karen's relationship compared to he and Heather and now Muse, her becoming a villain, is an interesting juxtaposition. I assume we're going to get that. But now we have so much so many other things going on with him in jail and Wilson gone and Muse and all of that. Like, that already feels over too much going on, when if they just double paired it back, we could have had it.
It's a moment at the end of the season when she finally puts on the mask and then sees herself in the mirror instead of Muse.
Very cool.
It's a very cool shot, but it doesn't have the impact it should, because we've dragged out eight episodes to get there, when if that had happened even halfway through the season, it would have been more pleasing because it would have felt like, okay, here we go, rather than, okay, let's wait until March of 2027 and see what happens.
I would have loved to see that as a reveal, rather than the slow playing it and watching her where we're just ahead of it. If she's in those early episodes where she's just being sort of a maniac regular person and like being a jerk, if she like punched Karen like she did in the last episode, and then we see her just later put that mask on, I'd be like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, hell yeah. That's badass. But, you know, that's the way it is.
Lots of other stuff to talk about in the episode. I did really like the bookends here with Panatu, the Indian restaurant. I liked how they played it off like a dream that Karen was having at the beginning, but then it turns out to be real and not exactly a nightmare, but at least more realistic towards the end. I thought that was sweet and really nice. And that was, if I recall, the safe place that they met if they ever got separated earlier in the season. So I thought that was a nice callback as well.
I like that as well. At the beginning of the episode, I was like, oh no, Karen's going to die. And when, especially this whole like first chunk of the episode where we see that and then we see the sniper, the like fake bullseye set up. I was like, I don't know.
Can I throw something out there? Because we talk about this all the time. Conversely, I think Karen is never going to die. Like, at this point, I don't think they're ever going to kill her off. And I think that's 100% okay, because she is a character who is best known for dying in the comics. So she brings so much more to the show. She's clearly a main cast member and an anchor of it, just like Charlie Cox. So keep her around forever, and that's okay.
I hope so. It's just, I can feel it's such a temptation.
Sure.
And I worry especially, and I don't actually, I agree with you. I don't want it to happen. I think it's sort of a cheap thing to do because it's so expected from comic fans in the show. Sort of the plot plays at her being on the, about to be killed a lot. But I think the temptation with Heather as Muse and Karen is going to be high. Perhaps the highest.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess we'll see. Here's an element that I wanted a lot more out of that I don't think quite worked in the episode is Jessica Jones. I will reiterate, love Kristen Ritter. Happy to see her back as Jessica. She does nothing again in this episode, and it's a real bummer.
Well, to expand the iris on that a little bit, I agree. I really liked the end reveal where we get Luke Cage and stuff. Great, great setup for the future. But I needed her to be more involved, and we needed vigilantes. We needed that so hard in this. Like, we could have, and same with White Tiger. Like, she shows up and like emotionally justified, liked it. Great to have them all fighting together. I'm like, make this team happen. Make this be more of a problem for Fisk so that it can be good. But in the larger sense, too, like Bullseye. I was like, awesome.
Well, wait, sorry. Just before, I definitely want to talk about Bullseye. But before we move on with Jessica, this is another one that felt like table setting for next season. And spoilers for season three. They've been filming it in New York for the past couple of months. And when you're filming something outside, pictures get taken. So we are going to see Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and surprisingly, Danny Rand, Finn Jones is back as Iron Fist in season three as well.
And you wrote a lot of letters to make that happen, right?
I did, nonstop. I kept sending them like, hey, check out my fist, like photos of my fist doing various stuff so that they knew what I wanted, you know?
Good. I mean, I think that is a great way to make a case.
I think so. That's what I've learned from watching Trials on Daredevil is you can basically do whatever you want. So they're going to be back. That info came out after I had seen this episode. Like, I screened it a while back, a couple of months back. So I did not know that Luke Cage was going to be in this episode. So that was thrilling for me. Like, I loved seeing that. I was like, oh, are they going to do it? Are they actually going to bring it back? And that was great. Revealing the alias investigations, also great, very fun to see that back. I think they're just going to use it in season three. There's been some rumors about a Jessica Jones spinoff, but I feel like the ratings of Daredevil don't necessarily justify that, honestly. Yeah. What do you think?
I agree with you. I think it'll be just more of a, especially with Daredevil in jail, with Matt in jail for some part of the season, I feel like Jessica Jones and Luke Cage may take the place of Cherry for these first two seasons.
No, not Cherry. No, we have to have Cherry back.
No, I think
Cherry brings so much to the show.
Cherry is not on top.
Okay, I'm going to throw out some of the defining characteristics of Cherry, a character I love. First of all, he's old. Second of all, he investigates stuff. Third, I believe he works for Christy McDuffie, but I'm not 100% sure.
I actually don't know if that is true. I thought he worked for Matt, essentially.
Yeah, he's definitely there a lot. He's in the office a lot.
The idea that he works for Matt and Kristen is insane. It's like he's like Matt's like vigilante junior, but he's like 80. Or he's like just helping out at a law firm as a fixer. I was like, make a choice, Cherry.
No, I agree with you. I think they absolutely take place of Cherry. It's also a classic, like, well, Daredevil's not on the streets, so we got to pick up the slack type thing probably going on. I also do think, while we're getting into, like, prognostication, which is definitely cart before the horse here, but I do think we're definitely going to get Luke running for mayor. I think we'll see Sheila as interim mayor picking up, and then Luke trying to push for vigilante rights, running for mayor of New York City, and probably getting it.
I mean, I think we could take a break from politics in Daredevil, Born Again.
I agree.
Like, because, like, all of the governor, mayor, the, like, lieutenant mayor, the Charles, from the Fed, I was like, none of that was useful for this. Like, truly, erase all of it, you have a better show. Just straight up delete.
Literally, like, oh, no, the attorney general called, they're offering you exiles, gets rid of the governor and saves everything. Like, that's all you need. Again, it's like trying to be like, we got to be legally locked up about how we're getting rid of the guy that just threw citizens of New York all over a hallway. No, you don't need an excuse there. You don't need to, like, make sure it's legally admissible in a court of law.
I don't even need to offer him a deal. I need someone to walk in and say, hey, they're exiling you, and that's your only choice. You'll never step foot in this town again. And the cut to him on the beach, better.
Yeah.
More aggressive, showing his weakness more. Giving him the chance to take a deal is like, what? No. He needs to be pushed out. That's how you get an L, is you're depowered.
I want to talk more about the politics of it, but let's talk Bullseye before I forget. What were you going to say about that?
I thought that sequence was cool. The idea of, like, he takes down the fake Bullseye, that they're going to do a whole kill Matt setup thing with, and it's just so, I was like, you're going to have that many of the anti-vigilante task force standing next to the fake Bullseye? Why did you do it that way? You're clearly busted. And it's such a great turn, though, out of that, to have Bullseye kill fake Bullseye and then also snipe someone. You know,
all cool. Like, Bullseye is cool. I agree. Like, great shooting in that sequence. There was sort of like the flip that follows the knife. That was pretty sweet. What is going on with the balancing of the scales thing? Like, they spent so much time on these, like, I killed Foggy and I got to make amends for that. And we're like, well, you didn't kill a guy who was going to kill the mayor, the governor, and that allowed her to get rid of the mayor. And now he comes in, kills a fake Bullseye and a bunch of guys. He's trying to kill Kingpin, but Buck jumps in front of it. So I don't know where his scales are. It just felt like a way to have a cool Bullseye scene in the middle here. Potentially a callback to Bullseye's introduction in Daredevil Season 3, where he played a fake Daredevil. Also, potentially paralleling the scene in, I want to say, the Season 1 Born Again finale, where he tried to kill Fisk. He was actually trying to kill Fisk, not Vanessa, at that point, right?
I believe
and
so.
And Matt jumped in front. So here, Buck, who is sort of the evil Daredevil as well, jumped in front. So, I don't know. I get what they were going for, but once you think about it for a second, I'm like, why is he doing this? Why is this going on?
And I wish they did a lot of work to be like, this is logical and makes sense, sort of in the same style of Punisher. And I'm like, just make him crazy. Make it so he's out of touch. And then we don't have to worry about... Matt was like, no, it's actually not how you do it. I'm like, no, just let him be crazy.
Because
that makes this scene make sense. And I'm not like, yes, I'm not, I don't like the nature of him, but the fact that he can be a force of nature in the show is good.
Yeah.
And especially, like, it makes me think there's just so much doubling going on in this show that they could just cut out one layer of it. All of the politics stuff we just talked about.
Yeah,
like
they have
Buck.
All of these parallels, but they're not... They're just They're parallels without connecting is the problem. Like we're talking about, Buck Cashman is an aspect of Daredevil. Bullseye is an aspect of Daredevil. But they're on their own paths, and we don't see how that affects Daredevil, so it doesn't actually change anything.
Well, but also I'm like, I don't need two doubles. I need one so I can see right. the value in it. If you have Buck being evil Matt and then Bullseye being evil Daredevil sort of, they're not related to each other, and Matt's just sort of running between all of them trying to fix them. And then you have like Buck and Danny, and they're slightly different, and it's like, but which one is meant to be the one? Like
right.
make Danny become the Buck and be reluctant about it. Rather than Buck is this cipher that jumps in front of the bullet that is like, okay, I guess. The same with the Vigilante Task Force. You have Cole and the guy we all hate. And I'm like,
Powell,
yeah. And like, we get the turn here where Cole knocks him, but it's like 30-second scene in an episode that's good and so much happening. I'm like, just make that one person and make it White Tiger that punches him or yeah. whatever. It's not like Cole's good now. He did too much bad.
Right, exactly. And he's in prison at the end with Matt, so we'll see more of him next season. But I agree with you. It was already insane that they brought Cole North back for the second season, and they clearly only brought him back for that turn at the end. So you feel the writing behind that, and that's not what we got in a lot of the really great scenes of this episode, but you felt it there.
Yeah.
Last thing on the Bullseye thing, let's talk about Mr. Charles, who I know is not your favorite, but I like the move of him trading Luke for Bullseye just in terms of like plot devices. But what could possibly come of this?
Well, and what, like, if you're not going to tell me what's happening with Bullseye, if they're just on a plane together, I'm like, just do something next season to make Bullseye be a federal agent or whatever.
Right.
Or is this setting up something? It's not going to be in the Punisher one shot. It's not like it's for another project.
Yeah, this feels to me like a lot of the things in Marvel that are like, we're setting up something big and you're never going to see it because we don't have as many projects as we used to. Like, it feels to me like they're setting up a Dark Avengers or an actual Thunderbolts or something like that with a bunch of villains in the MCU. I mean, if I was to extrapolate, maybe like they're going to Madripoor and they're fighting the Power Broker, you know, Sharon Carter from the end of Captain America and the Winter Soldier. But they're not going to do any of that.
Yeah,
they're not going to do any of that. So instead, you're going to have Bullseye come back next season and he'll be like, woof, weird time overseas.
Right. Yeah, that's why I think the Charles character, while interesting, and I like how much of his time on screen was him being like, did I get a coupon or whatever, which is such a weird choice, but at least it's interesting. Yeah. His plot stuff was so unnecessary for the show.
If the goal of the showrunners and people who are working on Daredevil Born Again is to make this more like the Netflix show, having characters and plots that are parallel to the MCU but never actually connect or make sense in any way, like, mission accomplished. Accomplished with Mr. Charles. I want to talk about the politics a little bit, because here's another thing that, like, I think works excellently on scene but gets weird the second you think about it. The Daredevil protesters storming the building to attack Kingpin. That whole scene, first time I watched it through, I was like, hell yeah, let's go. Let's get Kingpin. Here we go in here. The whole thing with like Kingpin coming out going boo and throwing people around the hallway, paralleling the hallway fight that he was having with Daredevil, again, feels like something they were like, we're holding on to the hallway fight for the finale. You guys love hallways. But it was sick. Like, that whole thing was
really
awesome
good.
The yes, entire time. Good. Here's the problem. My problem is Fisk is very clearly their Trump stand-in, right? Like 100%, no doubt about it. He is President Trump, except he's Mayor Fisk, down to, in this episode, he's like, I'm not leaving government. I'm not leaving office. Yeah. You can't kick me out of office. Totally get that. The Daredevil protesters who are taking down are clearly January 6th protesters who are storming a government building, but they're on the other side. And so when you start to think about this for 1 second, you're like, what is this show saying? What are they actually saying about politics right now? And the answer is, I think, the net sum is like zero.
Yeah, it was super confusing metaphorically, because they were also dressed up like the Q Shaman in a way. Like, it felt like if that was an unconscious parallel, I'm like, you, someone should have noted that and been like, hey, this is a little too January 60. Unless your point is like, actually, it's good that they did that. They were doing good stuff.
I think this comes down to and maybe not an ignorance, but an ignoring of politics that has come through with a lot of modern superhero stuff, which because, and this is me talking out of school, but like, because they're Disney owns Marvel, you're not going to be like, hey, we're going to do a very specific political thing. Like, Andor got away with it somehow. Like, somehow they snuck that one under the wire. Like, obviously, there's multiple levels of approval that need to go through. But it is a minor miracle that Andor was so shockingly on target as it was in terms of being anti-fascism and in terms of how you build a rebellion versus Daredevil Born Again and a lot of Marvel projects and a lot of other projects. I think we could throw this out to the DCU side too. We talked about this a lot with Peacemaker, where they're like, politics, huh? These are images. And that's like as far as it goes. And whether it's fear or a misunderstanding of how politics work or a purposeful misunderstanding, it leads to confused messages like the one that we got in this episode.
And it may be like that we're not doing politics, so we'll just we want to do this set piece that we like the imagery of, like you're saying. And maybe that they're saying like, well, we're apolitical, so it doesn't really matter. But I just think it's going to conjure ideas in us. And if you're a steward of your story, I feel like you want to make sure you're in control of what the audience is walking away with. And I fully agree. This is one case where it's a mixed what the understanding is.
Yeah, because in terms of the city coming together and everything, it works, but it's like the very specific imagery they're using, it is impossible not to think about January 6th when it happens. That all said, it does crest in this really nice moment, I thought, where Daredevil saves Kingpin from this mob, and they have just a very quiet conversation, and I really liked that. I love that, like, that was the way that they solved this, not with the two of them once again having an enormous fight, but really just hashing it out. I thought Vincent D'Onofrio was fantastic in this scene as he slowly comes around to the fact that, like, no, he has no choice here.
Well, and just taking it all the way back, like, I love this sequence, despite the mixed metaphor thing we just talked about. Like, I thought this was great. The way that Wilson – I love that they're holed up in the same building. Mm-hmm. Was really smart in different parts, and then it just gets, you know, unsettled, and they go and fight. And Wilson being just open the door and be like, I need to kill some people, was like super effective. It felt real. Again, the performance, it felt like he's like, I need to do this because I cannot sit here. I'm bad at that. I'm good at wrecking people's mm-hmm. bodies. And I've said before that he's so powered up in this show. But it's effective in this scene, even though I'm like, how is he killing people's spines?
Yeah.
But it's so well done. It's so scary. And like every like citizen that goes after him, he like bends them into a pretzel. They're dead.
He's the diametric opposite of this, but I was also having fun watching this being like, what if Mamdani did this? Yeah. Just started throwing people around the hallway. What would happen? I don't know.
Well, let's see. It's early in the term.
Yeah.
It's early in the term. But then it all building. And then the fight, like with all of the townspeople in Daredevil costumes coming in, I was like, is this meant to be hell? Are we like, this is the big Faustian moment? And it did look like a classic, like a Bruegel painting where it's like everyone's tortured. Fisk in white, Daredevil in black and red, everyone else in a sea of red. The building was very cool and old school, like Old Testament shit. Like, very awesome.
And yeah, so, like, and on the level of Kingpin's main goal is he hates Daredevil and wants to kill Daredevil, having a bunch of people coming at him all dressed as Daredevil that he can destroy worked as well. So, yeah, everything about that fight was just great. And I will say, though, that the Kingpin stuff was so over the top insane that it made everything that was going on with Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and White Tiger like, a little diminished because it was like, okay, this is a regular hallway fight. Over here is the sickest hallway fight you guys have ever done.
I agree. It reminded me of the Darth Vader scene in Rogue One you're like, you've watched this movie that's really good, and then you see this fight that is just such an escalation emotionally and physically and everything, that everything else just sort of looks a little pale in comparison. And especially that they were happening at the same time, I was like, and I, not that I wanted Daredevil to wreck some people, but like, I was like, something has to happen to be on par.
Yeah. We also got a weird moment in there, just to jump back to White Tiger, where clearly now she has White Tiger powers and is crawling on the wall, which, like you were saying earlier, we just needed more of her. Like, she just sort of pops in and pops out. We don't get a lot of resolution there. I like the character. Hopefully we'll get more next season.
Yeah.
Speaking of another character we haven't really touched on, Bibi Urich. I didn't think it was like enough of a payoff, given we've gone through so much with the Bibi report. But I did like the fact that Fisk gives an address to the city exactly like the City Without Fear stuff she's been doing.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice parallel.
That's cool.
But I was a little hampered watching this and the Buck scene, knowing they originally shot this with Daniel being alive and then re-edited it. So the scene where Buck goes to tell Fisk about Daniel, initially he lies to him, and that's part of it. Here they clearly cut out certain details and certain lines. And then BB, with the BB report, being like, go back and take your city, back your city. We've lost friends, and showing off a picture of Daniel. I wonder what was originally there, because originally Daniel didn't die.
Maybe they lost their friendship, though, Alex.
Yeah.
And maybe the part of it, though, is that Danny has to run. And at the end of this episode, he was exiled like Fisk.
No, he originally came back and tendered his resignation to Sheila. And then Sheila was like, nope, I'm going to keep you in the administration. I'm keeping you close.
Well, then that's definitely weird.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. One last thing. I was stupidly excited to see the editor at the New York Bulletin pop up again. That's the same guy who Ben Urich worked for back in Daredevil, and then Karen Page worked for when she moved to the New York Bulletin. It was crazy that he was like walked into the scene, like literally one shot. He was like, here's a box. Goodbye. But just for that. But I don't know. I was sucker.
Yeah, it was cool. And like, I liked the Ben Urich connection with BB. I actually thought was nice. It's a deep cut and doesn't have a ton to do with anything that we've seen in Born Again. But it was nice.
They should have done more with it. The BB and Daniel, that whole storyline distracted from the stuff. I've said this before, but it's distracted from the stuff that was interesting about both of the characters. I'm all for a cute on-screen romance, but there was a better way of doing that rather than like, oh, we're sweetly having dinner together and going to birthday parties on Staten Island, where BB was doggedly pursuing this story and trying to get justice for her uncle, because that scene at the end, as much as I enjoyed it, felt a little like an afterthought.
Well, and we didn't get any payoff. They did have sort of a romance. She just says, we've lost friends. She doesn't confront Kingpin. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have any like big catharsis. And honestly, Danny, because of the way it was decided to happen, doesn't get any sort of like, he killed this good man or someone who became a hero at the end or whatever. So I don't know.
One other thing that I thought it was very funny, they clearly held back until the finale, was Kingpin telling his story on the stand and saying, when I was a boy, which was one of his catchphrases for the first three seasons of Daredevil. So I could just see them in the writer's room being like, we can't have him say that until the eighth episode. The fans are going to go nuts when he says, when I was a boy. All they needed was him making an omelet as well, and we would have been good to go.
That's all we need from our little Kingpin.
Yes.
The moment in where I really wanted Powell to, he's such a good, hateable villain. Mm-hmm. The fact that they're holding him for next season, I was like, this better be good, guys.
Yeah. And was he in the line of prisoners?
Yes.
That Matt, he was in there.
And I like that. I think it's cool if that's an antagonistic, a good in there villain, but he needs to lose.
Right.
Like now.
Yes. And he's also not enough of a fleshed out character. He's just like bad cop, and that's pretty much it, who loves being bad. So if they're going to keep around, give us a little more, because, you know, if we are jumping, and we have been jumping around, but if we're talking about next season, the whole thing with the Devil in Cell Block D storyline, which, again, they are not going to adapt directly because they've already used most of it in season two when the Punisher goes to jail with Kingpin. Like, that's right. The major facet of it is just Matt's going to be in Gen Pop with all the people who hate him, which is not going to be a bunch of supervillains, unfortunately, because they don't have them this at all. Yeah. But it is going to be the Anti-Vigilante Task Force. So I assume we'll get, like, Matt and Cole North teaming up fight back against Powell and the bad AVTF guys.
If I had to predict it, it's going to be they're going, the ATV, anti, the AVF,
AVTF.
AVTF. Not good letters for my brain. They're going to be going after Cole, and Daredevil's going to protect him. And so Cole is going to, because he betrayed them. So that's what I think it's going to be. Maybe that is justifying all of the doubling of Cole and Powell. But it does just seem like to let us sort of cook in a season of, like, what are these two? What's the point of these two? Is a little hard, I think.
Well, one of the things that Dario Scartapane, who's the showrunner, has talked about a lot is that he wasn't interested in the politics, which, as we talked about, like, no duh for watching this, and wants to just get back to, like, basic street-level vigilante. He's called out Frank Miller a lot. Like, he wants to get back to that. Fun villains throughout. How do we... I don't know if there's any more we want to say about this episode versus, like, turning to our vision board and talking about the next season. But, like, how do we get there from here? Is it an entire season of Matt in jail while the rest of the Defenders are picking up the slack? Does he get out quickly and then he's back on the street and fighting Lady Muse or whatever and potentially other villains? I don't know.
Probably a split. If I had to, maybe we should just go to the vision board because I'm ready to
You're tapped out, man.
I have nothing more to say but predictions. Like a Nostradamus.
Let's do it. What's your prediction for next season? What do you want to see?
I feel like we're going to get a split season with Matt in jail and the trial of Daredevil. We have to see that, I think. And that's a lot more courtroom stuff, which I guess is good if they can really deliver on it. But I don't want that to be the whole season because that's too much. And I think we need Matt out. He's going to get frustrated. He's got his in-prison fights. But then I think the Muse Karen stuff going on outside and whatever Alias is going to be doing, I want him to be involved in that by the halfway point, if nothing else.
Yeah. My big things, and these probably aren't going to be much of a surprise based on what I've said on this podcast episode alone, but one, keep the focus on Daredevil. It comes out of Daredevil, like all of it, all of your storylines. Don't lose focus on him with this rapidly growing cast. I do have a sneaking suspicion we're going to get the Mayor Luke Cage storyline or him running for that. I don't want them to do it, but I think they're going to feel that siren call. Like, we can table the discussions about vigilantes and what they are and what they do to the city. That's not the interesting part. That's not interesting at all. But given the way this season goes, I think we're going to get, like, slow playing everything. They're going to be looking at it as an 8-part story, an 8-part movie, rather than the episodic nature that I think defines season one. So that's a little bit of a bummer to me if they do go in that direction. I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. I want to see Matt out of jail. I want to see more episodes. I want to see more villains of the week. I'm definitely tilting at windmills here with all of that stuff. But, like... Yeah. There's so much they can do with this show as they continue, just, you know, lead into it. And the other thing that I would say if I was giving notes for the show, and it's far too late because they're halfway through filming the season, it's coming out July, is feel free to get rid of some characters. And this is nothing against people who need jobs. I want everybody to have their jobs, but there are too many characters on the show that they clearly do not know what to do with.
Yeah.
Pare it down. Focus it. You know, that's what we need. Like, Karen, great. I almost feel like they're not going to get rid of Kingpin. He's going to be a big part of the season. And again, I don't know how, other than him wandering around on beach the entire time. You could even get rid of him for a season and focus instead on other things, and that would be okay.
I agree with you. if Kingpin's out of the picture, at least for the beginning, then we have a more compartmentalized season of Daredevil in prison dealing with that, and then Karen, Jessica, and something happening on the outside. That's nice. That's a little more simple, and we can just really drive into that, fingers crossed.
Well, yeah, or even if they want to go whole hog, and I doubt they'll do this, but get him out of prison at the end of the first episode. Have the first episode is Matt Murdock in prison. He gets out, escaping with Cold North or whatever happens. What's the second episode? They're on the run, you know, and
yeah.
Focus on like these very specific things that can happen in episodes that can tell us something about the characters rather than another situation where we get eight episodes of knowing Heather is going to become Muse, but that doesn't happen until the final seconds.
Imagine they hold off a whole nother season on her becoming Muse.
Oh my God. I would go crazy. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We're going to be back next week, like we said, for The Punisher. One last kill. Should be interesting to find out what Frank has been up to.
The trailer was pretty good.
It's rad. I'm hyped for that. I think John Bernthal obviously does a fantastic job as Punisher, but he cares deeply about the character. I think that's going to be cool. So we will be back for that. And then, yeah, for Daredevil at least, we'll be back next March, most likely, is when the show is returning for season 3.
So shouts to that.
Shouts.
Way to end strong, DD.
Yeah, way to end strong. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Daredevil, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
And follow up on the painting. Did Fisk get it refurbished? Let's see what my favorite character of Daredevil is, the white painting.
Season 3, whole episode about what is up with the painting while everything's going on.